hey, Gundamaniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I am Adam Blue, and I am talking slow because I know there's loud metal music playing right now, and I'm waiting for it to fade out. I keep meaning to fix that. But joining me in this metal fade out is Steven. What's up, Steven?
Not a lot. I know I'm wearing the garb of the enemy here, right? Like, no, honestly, like I'm having a good day, and I felt like, you know, representing Disney World because there's nothing wrong with Disney World. Disney World's great.
Yeah, no, that's funny. I, speaking of shirts, I like how Zionic Shadow saying, I hope Adam not wearing another dad shirt. Yeah, I feel like sometimes we're just randomly wearing these dad shirts. The other day, my wife was making a comment like I dress like a dad because I had my kids like school shirts on 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good to see everybody. Glad to see the chat is active. I don't know what to do with myself because lately I've been standing. When I do my show, and I'm sitting today because I felt like I like to stand when I'm doing my recorded videos, but I think when I'm live, I kind of like to just chill.
Relax, you know, stay a while. Exactly. Let's just,
yeah.
If it makes you feel any better, this new chair that I've got actually is like not tall enough that I'm on the level of my camera. So like I have a booster seat underneath me. I feel like a toddler. My little legs are swinging underneath.
I'm sure you and your daughter share that.
I need a bib and
yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for being here. Another cool show today. This is that type of show where it's Gundam related when there's not news. I make stuff up on the fly, and Steven does a good job of keeping me checking. Now, we're going to talk about a couple things today. There was that video I put up of, like, is Zeta the best sequel? And I think the best comment was from you, and it was like, no, it's the best anime. So I think I want to talk about that a little bit. We'll get into that a little bit later about the best anime. And it's like, yeah, isn't it? But I wonder if there's other things out there that people would say, no, it's really this, you know.
But yeah, hey, I'm sure that everyone has an opinion, but you know, they would be wrong. And so that's the important thing, is to remember that we pursue wrong. Truth here.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, no, it's cool. Yesterday on your show, which if you haven't watched it yet, people should check it out, because I had kind of gone lately where when Metaverse news comes out, I'm just kind of, you know, the Gundam Metaverse, I'm just kind of like, whatever. But you did a breakdown actually yesterday on your stream. So I'm not going to go over that again, but for an update on the Gundam Metaverse, check out what Steven covered, because there is some stuff going on. And like, for me, it seems like I guess I purposely was, not paying attention. It's like, I'll wait till it fully comes out. But they were like really doing legit things. North America testing, getting some Gunpla scanned in. They have
Gunpla battles.
Yeah.
That's the battle. Big thing, right?
Yeah. So check that out, because I'm going to actually be listening closer now, because that does seem more aligned with what all these companies talk about a metaverse and what the future of Gundam/Gunpla should be in the digital age.
We live in very interesting times right now. Obviously everyone's in like AI panics and things like that. So, but I think it's exciting.
It is. It's cool to see the progress they're making. And, you know, speaking of AI, it's crazy. Like the company I work for had like this AI sort of like office hours meeting where it's like everyone could just join in and talk with an expert. We have an AI expert, and it's refreshing being able to talk to people that really understand the practicality of it. And not only that, but know how to really use it to help, you know, not just like what people are trying to do to make a quick buck, but that there's real application.
I'm a big proponent of the use of like ethical AI in order to make certain tasks more manageable. I'm not a fan of like, you know, replacing certain people or things like that. And then some of the stuff, honestly, as impressive as it is, it's kind of diabolical. Like, you know, there's the AI like avatars where if you record like 5 minutes of yourself talking, they even have hand movements, and they will like, you know, you have these recorded messages where an AI is going to talk for you, and they'll even do the same hand motion over and over to make it seem like they are you and they are talking for you, but it's just a script that's text to speech. It's like,
you just did the work. I can just upload what you did just then.
There you go.
I just made a Steven.
Do not steal my likeness. No. But, and so, I mean, yeah, they're, like I said, it's impressive what they're doing, but like, you know, this fear of like, oh, well, they're going to replace actors with AI. And it's like, you know what? I hope they do, because honestly, that looked like crap. Like,
it's very interesting where this is going. So that, and that kind of, you know, again, shout out, you know, to Bandai, because I do think that they are not going through, you know, with the buzzwords and all the corp speak, they're kind of like really showing and trying, like, here's what we're going to try to do with this new technology.
Yeah. And obviously they're not chasing a quick buck, because, you know, I'm sure that hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million, have gone into this project so far, and they have not seen a dime from it.
Yeah.
So it's like, so you have to think they are putting the time and effort into making this project something special, which, you know, they could have just crapped out like a little VR.
Well, you know, and that's what's interesting, because did you know that, and I think it was last week, Bandai Namco released 3 indie games for free, which is, and I should actually at least try them. One of them, you're a dog in a house and you can just kind of like mess around with everything. But that, see, that's neat, and it doesn't make sense to me, because it's like, if you're putting money into something that is related to gaming, it makes me think you're trying to just get more people into your gaming ecosystem. I would think the way to do that is use an IP that already has a built-in fan base, like Gundam, and make a prestige game. Like, that is, that's what you pull people in by, taking something you're known for, but then doing a prestige piece, you know, like, you know, like the Harry Potter game, even though I didn't play it, I think it turned out that way. That Harry Potter game became super successful, and it was what people wanted out of a Harry Potter game, but they, you know, they put all the production value into making it, you know, that sort of thing.
And one thing you can say about Harry Potter fans is that they are a passionate bunch. So if you were going to get a group of people to make a video game like that represents Harry Potter, then Harry Potter fans would do a good job. And I feel the same way about Gundam fans. Like, obviously we are a passionate bunch. At least we are when we're arguing with each other on Twitter, but
like that. That's funny. I feel like there's a movie, a story in there where like someone uses Twitter data to build this evil AI. And it, like, it knows what to say exactly to piss you off.
I mean, it reminds me of that scene from Terminator 3 when Arnold is like talking to John Connor, and he's like trying to get him out of his despair, and so he like just says things to needle him. Yeah. He's like, oh, well, you know, anger is more useful than despair right now. Like,
that was pretty good.
I do what I can.
Yeah, so that was actually very interesting. 3 Bandai games. I'm going to have to check them out.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, I only just realized that there was a Sonic Steam game where it's like, who murdered Sonic the Hedgehog?
Oh, that's right, yeah. And it's free, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's very smart.
That flew completely under the radar.
Yeah. Like, some random, like, the genre, you know, and it's very interesting. I like these little things. And actually yesterday, I don't want to veer too far off of Gundam.
Oh yeah.
But there is that Triple I initiative, the like the indie game stuff. So a lot of cool indie games, you know, being announced in a time where I think we're going to see less Triple A games. So, and that really makes me think of what future Gundam games are going to be. Like, you know, Gundam Breaker 4, you know, not a big budget game. It's most likely a smaller budget game, but like, what other Gundam games? Like, I there was a whole bunch, you know, that Bandai said they canceled. So who knows if those were Gundam or not. Yeah.
So now let me ask your opinion on something. You know, it seems to me like there's a lot of studios right now that seem to be kind of outsourcing their IPs and outsourcing their game development to either smaller studios or at least studios that are adjacent to them in size. And it allows them to kind of broaden their reach by allowing people, you know, who aren't directly tied to the company, you know, play with these IPs. Do you think that it is more beneficial to take that approach, or do you think it's more beneficial to do what it seems like Bandai is doing right now, where they're kind of consolidating all of Gundam games like under the Bandai Namco Entertainment branch, where it's like everything's done in Unreal 5, everything's you know, being published by the same company? Do you know, do you think that a decentralized approach works better, or do you think that it's better to have everything, you know, kind of in-house?
That's a good question. It's something I think about often. Isn't that weird? But no, really, it's, I think there's a little bit of there's multiple things going on, because sometimes developing in-house is super expensive if you don't already have a team. What Microsoft has been doing in the past few years is just acquiring teams. You notice their first party output, like main, like what you expect from Microsoft Studios, not that great, but then they'll get some pretty cool titles, interesting, unique, not like high production prestige, but unique titles from other people. Now, like Disney even, you know, canned its internal development. It has recently been making relations with other companies to make games with their IP. And that's kind of the way to go. Like, I think it's beneficial to have an in-house game development arm if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But if not, and I think Microsoft realized this, that they, I mean, Halo was really Bungie, even though they were under Microsoft. Microsoft knew, let's get that developers, have them make a game. I think Sony, if you notice, their studios have always been very interesting studios that they would bring in, but have a lot of oversight from PlayStation.
Yeah.
And so I think it depends on the company, the brand. I think if, for like a Gundam example, they really should be allowing other companies to make games with their IP, just with the note that I think Bandai tends to be a little more restrictive maybe with what people do with their IPs, in terms of people haven't really, but I can only imagine if they're working with a team on a game, if you look at their past developers, it's developers are always working with. But I do think it would be beneficial for them to outsource, kind of like how I mean, some of these examples might be bad, but with the Star Wars stuff with Disney, I mean, Jedi Fallen Order turned out good. It was a mainstream style game.
Yeah.
But then there's these other Star Wars games sometimes that are just like, okay. And what's another, like Lord of the Rings, has there been a Lord of the, there's been some recent
Shadow games. Shadow of Mordor stuff, or like.
Well, even more recently, there was a game, wasn't it so bad? It got like the lowest, it was like a Hobbit game, I think. And it got like such a low score.
Oh yeah, it was Gollum.
Gollum, yeah, that's right. And I think that's an example of, wasn't it where the IP was available for other people to make use of?
Yeah. And that's one of the scary things is, you know, it's not necessarily when you let a third party studio in, it's when you don't have that oversight. And I think Bandai is particularly good about maintaining a level of control over their IPs, maybe even to their detriment, I would say.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that they would be well advised to outsource Gundam games to a couple of, you know, maybe not a AAA studio, but like a strong AA studio that could put something together that really resonates.
Yeah, I would even look at some of these newer players that were indie. They're getting a little bigger. They're making these games. It's almost like when you see a director that makes like an indie film that does well, and then a movie studio would want to get with that director and have them, oh, here's some movies you can make for us. And I think that's how they should treat developers. You know, Microsoft, you know, had Toys for Bob leave the company, but then they hired them for work. It's probably less overhead and more of a working relationship to be like, okay, this is the game we want you to make, and we're going to pay for this to happen. With Gundam, it would be great to get some more Western developers on it. I mean, think of like Insomniac, you know, was to, because they tend to make every game of theirs different, you know, in some way.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like, you got to look at the track record of the studio. Are they like a one-hit wonder, or do they tend to try and like crank out the same game year after year, but with different skins?
And, you know, another thing is, you know, when I think of top publishers of this time, I think Capcom is up there, developer and publisher. I think they make sure their games are good, and they've been doing that a lot. I even thought Resident Evil 6 was good. Even though it was more of just a straight up action game, I enjoyed it.
And you can't fault, I think, Capcom for kind of reinventing the gameplay there. You can definitely criticize them for taking an IP that is traditionally survival horror and turning it more into an action game. I think that if you were to take the gameplay from Resident Evil 6 and put a different IP to it, it would be a totally different story. You know, I think that it would have been much better received because it's a fun game. Like, that's...
Yeah, and so that's the thing. Like, Capcom has made third-party games. They've made Zelda. There's other games I can't think of off the top of my head that they helped with. But I think that could be another play where Bandai gets with a bigger publisher and developer for the purpose of funding it to make a prestige Gundam title that shows gamers that Gundam can be in the gaming realm as a God of War. You know, and that's what they need to do. But anyway, I could say what they need to do, but it's until we do what they need to do, and we will one day.
That's right.
Okay, someone else I want to talk about, and I know I've asked you this before, probably every week. Are you watching the X-Men?
I'm not up to the latest episode, but I don't mind spoilers, so we can. And I've read enough X-Men comics in the last 20 years.
Cool.
I'm not sure that they could throw any surprises at us.
Okay, that's neat. Because you know what? I was talking to my brother the other day. He's my older half-brother. He knows more about comics than I do. And stuff was happening in X-Men 97 that I didn't know was an X-Men thing. Mm. And, like, for one, that Cable was born from a Jean Grey clone.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. And so... my brother was telling me, like, this stuff has been in comics and stuff, and I guess they're just continuing that, which it's making me want to go read the comics then, to be honest. But this
those comics are good.
Okay, good. Yeah, but this latest episode, like, I even thought the two previous were kind of just okay, but this one did an all-out Gundam, like, destruction scene. And it was with the Sentinels, so those are giant robots. You know, that's Gundam adjacent. Okay, we're getting me excited. And it was awesome because it did the thing where it used, and it's because of you, I always do this. When I'm watching animation, why did they animate that?
Yeah.
There has to be a reason. So you make me think about that a lot. And it made me see with this episode how deliberate they are with a lot. Like, at the beginning of it, I was almost mad. Like, why are they going in this direction with all this stuff? To it be flipped on its head by the end. And we had a disaster scene. Not only did it have Sentinels running around like giant mechs, but this master mold, I don't know too much about it. Yeah, it's like a Sentinel that makes Sentinels.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about, like, the scary part of AI would be, like, self-generative AI. And that's essentially what master mold is, right? Is like...
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. So it works on its own. There's not, like, a pilot.
Yeah, I mean, he's his own entity. And so that, like, you know, when you think about the Sentinel program and, like, Trask and, you know, having, like, this mutant registration network, you know, having men create Sentinels is scary enough because then you have, like, bureaucrats involved and all that kind of stuff. But then once you start introducing, like, you know, let's have the Sentinel create the Sentinel, then all bets are off, right? Because it's just going to think of the most efficient way to kill all mutants.
Yeah. And so that was amazing to me because I didn't realize kind of the sci-fi-ness X-Men got into. Again, I liked X-Men as a kid because it felt like a sci-fi superhero show, but
yeah.
I collected, like, the cards. They had trading cards that came out, and I think I got some comic, but I never followed it outside the show. And the more I'm seeing, like, hints of stuff, the more I'm like, whoa, this is, like, really good sci-fi storytelling, actually.
Yeah. Once you get into, like, the time travel stuff with X-Men and, like, oh, man, and like, the split timelines, there's some really excellent pay dirt.
So I might get more into this because I was just recently reading some, like, the way time works in X-Men, I think, is incredible. Like, the way they do the time travel, because it allows you to go crazy, have different things happen in different stories, but it's almost like they can explain it, you know?
Yeah. And, like, I hate, you know, sometimes I hate the idea of, like, the multiverse because it, you know, it, like, it reduces the stakes of, like, the individual things that are happening. But I think that the way it's handled in X-Men, you know, particularly with, you know, Cable and Bishop and Forge and all of that, it's like they're very deliberate and very careful about, you know, just kind of hand waving everything and saying like, oh, well, none of this matters because we're just going to start a new multiverse over here where none of that stuff happened. It's like there's consequences to every, you know, every preventative action that a future person takes in the present. Like it does have a knock on effect, which is.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that because even watching the, I was showing my son the movie Days of Future Past, and like those X-Men movies, I've always thought they were well-made films, but as X-Men, it's not what I wanted.
It would they're be much more character-driven, like not like.
It would be dumb little things like their costumes or Rogue. Even though great character in the movie, I wanted the Rogue from the cartoon and to have that relationship with Gambit. Like the movies missed some of the things that I think made the cartoon good. And then they tried to make up anyway, but watching it, they were talking about the time travel, how, and I saw this in the cartoon too, where it's almost like you said, it doesn't matter, but there's an effect. So this is going to happen, but then we have to time travel to try to fix it. Eventually, like could it eventually get fixed? Does it end up creating an echo where there's like this infinite time loop for like the rest of your life? You're always running into yourself trying to fix time. Like,
I mean, that's an interesting thought. And honestly, it's like, obviously Robert Zemeckis handled it extremely well in the Back to the Future trilogy, because it was like, and that's an example where there's not like multiple timelines, like everything's happening in the same timeline, but the time travelers cause the effect that makes them have to go back again and fix the thing that they messed up. So,
which I find that interesting, because it almost makes it like they are then the heroes of their own story of the universe. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the universe would work that way. I think it would almost not allow you to do something.
Well, you know? And that's where, like, you know, the Flash movie was absolutely terrible, but it had the bones of a fantastic movie because it has that in it, right? Like
the new Flash
movie? Yeah, the one with Ezra Miller and Michael Keaton's in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
I mean, I think that, like, obviously the climax of that movie was kind of miserable because of like what they were trying to do, cramming in all of these cameos and, you know, making it really silly. But like the bones of that movie and the story that they were trying to tell, if they had stripped out all of the bad jokes and the cameos and stuff, that's a good movie.
Okay. Yeah. I've actually heard people say that too. It's like, there's a good movie in there. It just has a lot of that kind of superhero crap.
Exactly. But sorry, we are way down the line of tangents.
Well, no, that's interesting because, like, could there be a point in Gundam, and I'm saying specifically UC, where time travel could be introduced, or should we just not do that? I almost feel like that would make it a different story, but it would be neat, you know, because, like, how much does time travel affect your head context of a story you like? Because it could be like a story that's been going on, and then they introduce time travel. And it's like, okay, now this is a whole different thing. For instance, the Marvel movies, the MCU, I guess they did this in the comics anyway. But once they started doing the time travel, like there's this thing in my head where I have this universe where, okay, so this other stuff doesn't matter anymore, actually.
Exactly. and that's the fear whenever you introduce time travel, right? Is it's like, well, then why should I care about anything?
Because at any time, it's kind of like when a character dies, but then they're brought back. It's like, well,
you know, that's where I think that Amazon Prime movie with Chris Pratt.
Tomorrow War. Yeah.
That was an interesting flip on its head, right? Like, that movie was okay. Like I would give it a solid B+.
Right.
But like the idea that it flipped on its head, the idea like, oh, we're not going to send people back in time to fix something. We're going to send them forward in time because we don't have enough people.
Yeah.
That is a cool premise.
That was the thing. And I think having that be the premise is what made it watchable, because you kind of wanted to learn how that turned out, even though, it's funny because I rarely ever think of that movie.
Yeah.
Yet I think of Edge of Tomorrow all the time.
Oh yeah, Edge of Tomorrow is fantastic. Man, we could go like down the rabbit hole of every movie or TV show that introduces time travel. But you know, it's interesting because I think going back to your Gundam example, while I don't want there to be time travel in UC, it would be hard to establish an AU where time travel would matter, if that makes sense. Because part of what makes a time travel story compelling is that you have to be invested in the here and now before you can introduce the time travel that, like, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if it would have to be like a slow burn show, like one of those 40 episode shows where, like, you're being introduced to this world, and then maybe over the course of the show you realize the technology that one side is using, they got from the future.
Yeah.
And so maybe
the mid-season Gundam upgrade.
Yeah, there you go. And then it's about figuring out, okay. And that's the other thing, too. Whenever time travel is introduced in a story, it's like, okay, then the story should be, how do we deal with the fact that now we can time travel? Like, we're using time travel to fix something, but okay, now time travel exists. Do we destroy the fact that it, and I forget what movie might have done this, but it was the idea of once the first time machine was made, it was that point on you could travel back to that point.
That's pretty cool.
I forget what movie or show that was, but it was the idea where they could only go to where they had made it.
Well, and that's the whole thing with, like, that movie, The Time Machine, the book. Like, you know, it's like you can't go back and undo the thing that made you build the time machine in the first place. So it's like, you know, no matter how many times you use the time machine to try and fix the thing that you wanted to fix, that's done. Like, it has to happen, otherwise you don't make the time machine, and then you can't go back to try and fix it. So it's that self-fulfilling loop.
Yeah. Or, like, what if there's a way to, like, fix time travel, but you have to, with anytime you time travel, you're kind of like, you know, they say different things like breaking different timelines, and you cause, like, a pressure in the universe, or, like,
what time paradox.
What if there's, like, a way to undo that, where you go back and do things you wouldn't really think of, but then it creates effects that where then there's this, like, lack of knowledge that the general consciousness has, and that allows then things to not manifest. Or,
yeah.
And yeah, I think there's more that could be done with time travel. Like, and that's the other thing, in the X-Men movie, it seemed like they did the time travel by, there was a mutant that could, use the force and make them, I forget what character, she could go through walls.
Yeah, as
Kitty Pride.
I think it was Blink. Could Blink teleport?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So mind to be used as time travel is one thing. A machine to be used, but I would say, UC Gundam. Don't. It could be a cool side story. Well, yeah. What if it was like its own little side story? Like it kind of a almost in the vein of, this is a logic leap, but like the Emperor building the clone army, and then one clone found out and he was trying to let people know, but they killed him before. It's almost like there's a little pocket of Gundam you see where they figured out time travel and they were about to, like, stop Garen. stop Garen or stop Zeon Doom Daikun from being assassinated or something like that.
Yeah.
But then, like, they couldn't do it, and they realized there's no way that you could change time.
And there's that interesting show. I forget what it's called. I think it's called 1964 or something like that. The one that's got James Franco in it, where he's a time traveler trying to, like, fix things that happened in, like, the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting about that show is that the characters that are in the time that he's in, they all feel uneasy around him, and they start, like, you know, being like, you shouldn't be here, you know, like they start to recognize that he's like a foreign body that doesn't belong in that time, which is,
I love that concept. Okay. I'm gonna have to check that out too. I've heard of it, because I feel like there would be some sort of conscious effect with time travel that would, that's what I was talking about.
New types, like,
yeah. Oh, okay. So what if it goes there? What if there's this new type that's able to, make people travel through time or something by touching them on their head or I don't know. And
right. Cause you see in Gundam narrative, I think Ultronimus in chat brought up, like, you know, Unicorn and, like, you know, Banagher and Full Frontal going to the end of the universe.
That's right. So, okay. That's right. They did do that thing. And I like how they described it, because it wasn't anything that had really major effects on anyone outside of that instance really occurring.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you bring up a good point. We're going to move on from this, but I do think time travel could probably be used in more subtle ways than what a lot of movies or shows, I think, feel like they have to do.
Yeah. You know, there's so many, I think, great examples of taking time travel as a concept beyond what we normally, like, the first instinct is like, hey, let's go back in time and fix this thing that happened. It's like, no, there's so many more interesting ideas that you can explore there.
I'm going to have to keep that in mind. But, you know, next up, and actually, yeah, to end it here with the X-Men thing, really, what was just amazing for me is watching that episode, I realized something I like about it that's in Gundam, and that's tone. It's I'm not being talked to like a kid, even though it seems lighthearted in nature, but dark when it needs to be. You know, so it's almost like you can have a positive connection with the heroes, but then when serious crap happens, you really feel it. And Gundam does that. The X-Men show does that. And so I think that's that common thread. So then when the Sentinels popped up in the city, I was like, hell yeah, this is.
And that's keeping with the thread of like the 90s X-Men cartoon, right? Like Morph is killed in the first episode of the cartoon. And it's like, you know, you're sitting there, you know, 5-6 years old, you're like, ba-na-na-na-na-na. What just happened? Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, I was showing my son yesterday's episode, and dude, even the way it ends, like, for he was like, whoa, like it's pretty crazy.
Oh man.
But yeah, so a couple things. I made that video about the Lego Nexo Knights. Had you ever heard of that?
I had never heard of those.
Okay, because I guess, yeah, it was 2015, 2016, just like medieval cyberpunk, like techno punk maybe, but like it was the knights, they fought an army of automatons that and they had mechs, and they even had jet fighters, and everything was neon, and to me that aesthetic was amazing. And then as you saw in the video, there was like the three main mechs that I bought, because whenever I remember just going to Target to buy Legos for the kids, and then I'd see these mechs and I'm like, these look like mechs from something I would get into. And so, yeah, I'd buy them, and but it was unhealthy. I went all out. I ended up buying all of the other Nexo Knights that weren't even mechs. I bought the castle, but it was just fun with the kids having that castle and all the mechs. It's cool stuff. So it's like, I feel like it's so obvious for there to be a Lego Gundam or RX-78-2, you know, I think that's probably been talked about a whole lot. To me, that is a prestige thing. Back to the Future gets a DeLorean, you know, Star Wars, they have like the helmets. Like, I feel like Gundam, that would be a simple, like that would be an obvious thing. Have a little Lego guy in the.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to have like a full line. Like, I know that a lot of franchises have like, you know, there's a whole Lego Jurassic Park line. There's a whole Marvel Lego line, but even just a one-time partnership with Lego would do wonders for Bandai and for Gundam. Probably more so than an F1 partnership, but that's not.
No, but really, I mean, and that's the thing with it being Lego. It's something someone can buy, then have at their house. And they're like, well, I built this out of bricks. Oh, there's this thing I can build, you know, that's already kind of, that looks more like what it's supposed to be. And then you get people into Gunpla that way so easily. I think that would, that needs to happen. I would even think it would be cool. Again, it would be like, I think they did, the DeLorean like that. There's a few others where they do these prestige Lego releases. And yeah, just think if they had an RX-78-2. And it had the core block, like they just did that thing to make people go, wow, this is a neat thing. So, yeah, hopefully they do it. I would let them know, but they don't really listen to me.
They don't listen to anyone. Don't take it personally.
Yeah, good point. Okay, so the other video I dropped was something I felt like I've always wanted to talk about, but I didn't know how. And it came to me when because I always loved it. I love thinking about when creators make sequels. Because what is the driving motivational factor behind a sequel? Most of the time it's money, but what if there is that other story to tell? You know, so like George Lucas had an idea to tell stories, but it's funny that when then they go into production to tell the story, it's something different, you know, but at least he had those concepts and ideas there. And I wonder, and I haven't heard this, like, did Tomino have more to the original story? I mean, I think maybe some ideas went into future iterations, but I never heard of him. Like, had he written the novel? He wrote the novel, but not like any additional story.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he had always wanted to kind of conclude the story of Char. Because, and that's something that we've talked about before, where like Char is his Anakin Skywalker, where it's like the story's really about Char Aznable, you know, encountering his villain arc, and then, you know, maybe he finds redemption in the end through Amuro and that sort of, and that conflict. But, and the thing is one of those things that I would be skeptical to, like, if I were sitting down with Yoshiyuki Tomino right now and I were interviewing him, I wouldn't ask him about it because I think it would be unreliable. You know, it's like if you were to ask George Lucas right now, like, hey, you know, what would you have done differently in the prequels? Obviously, he would have an answer for you, but I don't think that that would have been his original intent. I think that, you know, 30, 40 years of hindsight is going to change your perspective on things.
Yeah. And so that's what's interesting. So then when it, so that's what's funny. So let me ask you this. Can a sequel be amazing? Like, should a sequel be amazing without you having watched the previous story? Or is it like, if you watched a sequel and didn't like it and you didn't see the previous, is that really then on you? Like, I wonder how much that matters in the conversation.
I think to your point, the video that you released on Monday, you mentioned Aliens, which is a fantastic sequel, probably in like the top 10, if not the top 5, it's probably the top 3 sequels ever made.
I agree.
You know, I think that what's fantastic about Aliens is that you really don't have to have watched Alien in order to appreciate it. You know, everything that you need to know that happens to Ripley in the first movie, they run through that in the first 15 minutes. And it's like, and then they don't even, this is one of the fantastic things that I think, you know, the Star Wars sequel trilogy could have taken advantage of, is all the characters are dead. It's 70 years in the future. We have one protagonist that survived, and we've already explained that, like, she has no memory of, like, any of the other things that have happened. So, like, she is coming into it as fresh as the audience is. So it's like they have a blank slate to work with. Whereas if they had, like, tried to follow the story of, like, other survivors from the Nostromo and all that stuff, they would have had all this sequel baggage that they had to deal with. It's like, no, we don't have any of that. We have a fresh start with a character that has been through an ordeal, but you don't necessarily have to have seen it. You just know that she saw it, and that's, you know, kind of her battle scars that she carries with her. It's a fantastic story on its own.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, there's that story when James Cameron was pitching Aliens, he just wrote Alien and then the S was a dollar sign. But there's, like, there's two things here. One, just the idea of aliens from Alien is a great sequel idea. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, let's make it where there's more and then there's a nest and a queen. Let's do some world building, which is a slippery slope, like with the prequels, doing the world building kind of alienates people. But, like, the baggage thing is interesting because if you think about it, well, it's interesting. Zeta almost has all that baggage, but then it almost doesn't because Char is a different character. It doesn't need to
no
be.
Char. What are you talking
about? And it's like there doesn't need to be Char until that world, the Earth Sphere, is looking for that because of the Titans, because of the AU, because of Ham. And so it's almost like they did a good job of making it, well, let's not have this baggage. Let's introduce you to this new character, Camille, and, like, the Titans. I never heard of them. Ayug, never heard of them. So it's like they do it a good job, all new stuff. And then by a certain point, you start pulling in the baggage, like Amuro coming. And it's now it's like, okay, for people that this is their first time, it's easier to learn about the previous, you know, stuff that happened. Yeah. And then for the fans of the original, now they're getting into all the deep lore they wanted to see. What is Quattro doing? You know?
And you know what's interesting is you can do that in a movie or a TV show that isn't a sequel. This is going to be kind of a stretch of a comparison. But, like, for instance, you know, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Great movie. Matt Damon befriends Jude Law because he's going to, like, you know, bring him home for his dad or whatever. And as the movie goes on, you're starting to be introduced to these other people that Jude Law's character, Dickie Greenleaf, knows and are complicating factors to Tom Ripley. You don't know all that stuff at the beginning, and you don't know what the history is between Dickie Greenleaf and his girlfriend, or Dickie Greenleaf and his best friend and stuff like that. But then as these characters are introduced, then you start to see the baggage that happened like well before the movie started. And so in the same way, you know, you can craft a sequel where that's the case, where it's like, you know, like you said, in Zeta Gundam, you don't appreciate who Shar Aznable is until you start seeing these other characters come in. And it's like, wait a second, this guy Kai seems really mad at this guy Quattro, who is obviously not who he claims to be. So like, even if you haven't seen the original Mobile Suit Gundam, they lay out pretty, it's pretty thick that they lay it on like Quattro is not Quattro, right?
Yeah.
And then as other characters come in and start interacting with him, that's when it becomes a problem. And that's where it becomes interesting. Like,
this is a, I'm glad you said this, because what this tells me is Zeta does work even if you didn't see the original. It's a great sequel because it's great on its own. I think that's what it really boils down to. And like you said, with Aliens. So I think you kind of helped me figure this out more. It's like, you can't actually make it not have to directly, you don't have to see the original story for it. Like, a sequel can be made well by not having to be a direct reference from the beginning. Of it's more of like, here we're in this world again, but we'll then kind of slowly introduce the stuff, you know. And if you think about with Aliens also, I guess the only real callback they really do is more of like the motherly nature Ripley has with Newt, knowing that after that first one, once you get another one, you know, she, like her daughter had already, you know, lived or whatever. So it's like, okay, that's that character development based on everything she went through in the first one, you know, leading up to that. So that, but other than that, they didn't really have to do much. I mean, they had the android thing, but they flipped it on its head.
And it, and honestly, it was explained away with one line, right? Like Paul Reiser's like, oh yeah, so she has a problem with androids because they had an incident with the artificial human on board. Like,
that's like, oh, they don't make them like that anymore or something.
Old
models.
Sometimes all it takes is one line of dialogue to dismiss an entire, you know, previous plot thread that might have been a hiccup to the movie.
Okay, so that's another common thread I'm seeing, where it's minimal dialogue but very conversational in order to give some of that historical context. Flipping things on their head, like with the android. I didn't call that in the video, but that's a good one. How the android was kind of bad in the first one, and this one was good. You know, kind of like how with the Titans and AUG, it's almost like, okay, who's bad, who's good? It's so, yeah, these are some good common elements that, in, okay, I want to talk about Gremlins 2 real quick, because that one is, like, it's almost like it's just making fun of itself that it exists. But I guess it works because the first one already had humor. So it's not like you're making fun of something that exists. It's like you're playing it up more.
It kind of reminds me of like the Tremors movies, where like the first Tremors movie is full of jokes and humor and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's still a scary movie, right?
Yeah.
And then like every Tremors movie from then on is like just playing back on the same jokes that
it is. Even though the second one is fantastic.
Yeah, the second one's great.
And then I think they're not, they get progressively worse, but they're entertaining for a little bit. Because I think there's been five or six, and even the last one that came out, like it was on, you know, Vudu, and I went to my buddy's house because we grew up watching them. And we're watching, we're like, wow, this is bad. It had like Jamie Kennedy in it, even though.
Oh, man.
It's like, he's pretty cool, but why in that? No, going back then to Zeta, like, okay, in chat too, what else would you guys consider to be like the best anime? And I know that's like a loaded question, but I think some things that come to mind are like Akira, Evangelion, when it comes to like what people talk about. And then there's even like the Studio Ghibli, but then it also gets into, well, anime is really just a means to deliver a story. So you can't really say what's the best. So I wonder if we do this in context of like a mature storied.
Well, and certain anime is basically written to be like serial, like it just keeps going, right? Like Dragon Ball Z, Bleach, you know, Naruto, like these are like the shonen type anime. They don't have like a finite conclusion because every time there is one, they just push it, you know, they just keep kicking the can down the road, you know, and like, oh, well, this is now Boruto, not Naruto. It's the kid, right?
So it's less about like a contained experience and more of just like some ongoing fun.
Right. Yeah. So I would exclude those if only for the purposes of like, you know, when do you really get the satisfaction of the story being over? Or is there satisfaction to be had from closure? Like, do you want
closure always
to just keep going?
Yeah. Are there levels of closure? Like maybe it's more important what a character did rather than what the conclusion of the world is. But also with Zeta, even I feel if I look at the designs in Zeta, they are still ahead of their time. And I wonder if people, I feel that when I look at it, but I wonder if people would look at Zeta and be like, whoa, that looks good for 85 or whenever it was. And so I wonder if that's like an element of that. Do you know what I mean? Where if people are, when they saw Zeta for the first time in 85, that had to have been amazing looking, like just the designs, the animation. And I wonder if that elevates it because it's almost like you watch something and then your mind changes. It's like, wow, that can happen. That can do that. You know, the Zeta design, for instance, I don't think there was anything as modern and future looking as that. The Zeta design didn't have any super robot elements, you know?
And I think for the first time in any sort of anime or television series, you had a truly like sci-fi spacecraft. Because if you think about any other transforming mech or any other like jet fighter, you always have like a clear canopy. You have like a cockpit that you can see from the outside. The Zeta, in its Wave Rider mode, it's not like a core fighter. It's not like Starscream from... It's not like from Macross where they're like jets, right?
Right.
It is its own like self-contained flying machine, right?
Using its same technology no matter the mode because they have that 360 cockpit. So it doesn't matter if there's a glass or not, you know, on the cockpit of its Wave Rider mode. So it's like using, it's using the sci-fi elements to be a modern ship and mobile suit.
Which is like, you know, when you think about sci-fi ship design, there's always like the question of like, well, why does it have to be aerodynamic if it's going to be in space, right? Yeah. And so that's always like a point of contention for like sci-fi realists. And so like, the design of the Zeta Gundam, the design of the Methus, like the Gaplant, these are all transformable machines that when they're in their flight mode, they could have just gone with like just make it look like an F-15 and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, we created like something special, like a really distinctive design that has a very identifiable silhouette and it fits, like you said, within the technology of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It is pretty amazing because even that I can only imagine someone seeing the Mark II at first, which is a great evolution of the original, and then the Zeta, and then getting those goofy suits, the Gaplants and whatever other suits that show up later. What was the other one? The Gaza, I think is like some of the
Hammurabi.
Yeah, there you go. That's another one where it's like, wow, this is so, and I'm just thinking if I'm in 85 watching this for the first time, there's not only that happening, but like, the intrigue of the characters, the intrigue of the world where it's really hard to know what's good or bad. Also, a character that's the main character at the beginning is being detained. He's running away. You're like, what is this? I feel like there's so many elements that it's like, even if you don't like it, I'm sure it would have an impression on you. You know, there's just so many things Zeta still does that, or Zeta does that a lot of shows just don't do or wouldn't do. Especially the abuse, slapping people all the time. But anyway, so going back, like, do you think there's a general consensus that like Zeta is a, I don't know if better is the word, more profound experience than like Evangelion?
I mean, that would be my personal opinion. I think that, you know, EVA fans are pretty, they're a pretty rabid bunch. So
yeah, that's the thing. And I haven't watched it. And I know Autronomous gave me a guide actually for that. I got to follow it.
Yeah, you know, I think that certain things just kind of connect with people more, and obviously there's the nostalgia factor, right? Like whatever you watched when you were 15 is like going to stick with you more than anything you watch now, right?
Although, so, as an interesting case study, I watched Zeta for the first time when I was like 38. You know,
it shows how well it holds up.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I'm so shocked and so excited about Gundam was when, you know, I saw Zeta and I was like, oh my God, this is ahead of its time, even right now.
yeah,
because I'm telling you, when you said that comment, like, is this the best anime? I'm like, yeah. But you know, something else I'll add to if I'm going to generalize anime, you know, first I would tell someone, yeah, I think it's just a means to tell a story. It's just in Japan, it was preferred and very, very artistically driven to do it in animation, like that.
Cost effective, right? Like,
okay, yeah, cost effective, yeah. Because I think of like when I Western animation versus like Japanese animation, I could be wrong because I grew up Western animation, but I feel like Japanese animation really knows how to emphasize where you can because you're drawing.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of Japanese anime, I think of things that are more adult themed. If someone's life is at risk or they're dying in an anime, I feel like they're kind of in the same, you know, the same ballpark, because it's like wanting to portray things in a very graphic and dark manner, but doing it in an anime is different than doing it in live action.
And ultimately, I think you and I have talked about this before, where like even kids would prefer to watch stories about adults. Like,
yeah,
you know, most kids don't want to watch kids do things. They would rather watch like an adult superhero. Like there's a reason that like kids like Iron Man.
Well, you know, there's a reason what you're saying right now popped into my head when I was thinking about why did I like X-Men so much? But it's because of this that you're saying. It's
adult. I mean, story. Kids very much look forward to growing up, which, you know, spoiler alert, it sucks, guys. Stay young as long as you can. But you know, I think that whenever you have a cartoon that is for kids, generally it's the best ones are stories about adults. And then the stories that are about kids are typically for parents or for adults, right? Like, you know, Bluey is a fantastic cartoon. And it's entertaining because it's bright colors and sounds and stuff for kids. But at the end of the day, who's the ones making all the Bluey memes? Like, it's the moms that are crying at the end of the episode because like, oh my gosh, Bluey walked to her mom. Like, you know, we're reliving the moments that are important to us as parents, right? Whereas kids are fantasizing about the moments that they are going to have.
That's a good little Venn diagram of, I think, the type of media that can be enjoyed. There's the adult themed, there's kid themed, and then there's that like for everyone, which can go from a Bluey to an X-Men, because X-Men's dark, but you know, it's very interesting. And I think that's another reason why I hate hearing when people say they don't like anime, and I used to be like that. It's because anime is so much than one thing. Do you know the YouTuber John Campia movie?
I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I think that guy's hilarious in terms of sometimes he gets like really emotional about the dumbest thing, but it's like shows how much he's into movies, you know, but
which is great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I think his channel works. But he always says he hates anime and he'll never watch anime. And I'm like, that's the dumbest thing to say. And I know this now from experience.
Well, and you know, it makes me sad sometimes because, you know, you think about like stories that a younger audience might enjoy if they weren't too adult themed, right? Like, like I could imagine enjoying a TV show like The Witcher when I was like 8 or 9 years old, but of course, you know, tons of swear words, tons of sex scenes and things like that. And it's like, you know, sometimes that stuff can be interesting, but like a lot of times it's just gratuitous. Like I personally hate Netflix dialogue that's just like f this effity f that. And it's like, you know, there's a time and a place for swearing, I think, and Netflix has completely gone off the deep end when it comes to that. And like, I hate sounding like such a prude and stuff like that, but no. It's like, if you can't tell your story without that, then you don't have support.
Dude, I'm totally on board with this, because this is something I think about a lot, because, you know, my youngest is 10. So I'm still, I still think about what he can watch. And yeah. There are things like, oh, I would love to watch this with him, but it does this. And this didn't really even need to be here.
Exactly. Like, that's the most yeah. offensive part of it, is it's when it's not even relevant to the story. And I think that it's done to like make teenagers feel like that's the way that adults talk. And it's like, yeah.
Or I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of other things I've watched recently that did this, but I remember like Three Body Problem. Mm. I don't know if you watched it, but the beginning of the first episode is overly gruesome to where yeah. like before it gets gruesome, like it's bad. And I get the point. And then it gets so gruesome that my wife was like, I can't watch this. What are we watching? And I was like, man, if she could just stay for the rest of the show, it's interesting. Mm. But that's another interesting aspect that yeah. it's like in anime. And this is what I was trying to talk about earlier. You can sometimes get away with things being gruesome because it's animated but it still yeah. has an impact because you know what's happening, but it's not as real. So you don't feel that like even action movies, when my wife is watching people punch each other, she can't take that because she really feels like people are hitting each other. And I'm sitting there like, whoa, they choreographed that. How awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that is funny. And of course, like, you know, can you imagine just how many like slaps would happen if there was a live action Zeta Gundam? Like, oh. I mean, that show would be,
yeah,
it's like John Wick level.
Yeah, I know. That's hilarious. No, but no, that's a good point. I wish I could think off the top of my head something I was watching recently that I was like, oh, I want. I don't know if it was Shogun. Shogun's not so bad, actually.
No.
Although, have you been watching the new one?
I haven't, no.
Okay, there's this cannonball scene you got to see. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah.
I could have been in the other one. I don't know. But, all right, that's about it for today's show, everyone. That was a lot of fun. Glad we can dive in deep into why Zeta is actually the best anime. We've determined yeah. that here, right now.
It's so, fact.
It's a fact.
The next time anybody questions it, like, just cite this video as a community note on Twitter.
excellent idea. Well, cool. Well, Steven, thanks for joining. And again, if you guys want some more information on the metaverse stuff we figured out, was on his show from yesterday, so check that out if you haven't. Links in the description for various random crazy things in our Discord. We have fun there, but yeah, we'll be doing this again next week, so everyone have a good one.
Thank you.
See y'all.